Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the March 11th edition of Commodity Week. The USDA reports are ho-hum, but the end of the week featured trade-impacting news from Asia. We'll talk about China and Japan today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Gentry, Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, Mike Georgie, Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Mike Georgie, late in the week, there were a couple of major events for agricultural trade, the earthquake in Japan and the inflationary report out of China. Will either of these have a long-term impact on the markets in Chicago?
Well, I think both things, especially last night's earthquake, helped catapult the downside about 3 o'clock, 3:30 when the news of the earthquake came out. I think the monthly supply and demand report on Thursday wasn't anything real bullish. So, all the news was in. It was kind of like buy the rumor, sell the fact. I think that news helped catapult to the downside. And I don't think we're going to catapult right back up. I think we're going to have some weather or acreage numbers now. So I don't think we're going to jump right back up, but I don't think we're going to, we broke the 50-day moving average on corn, 100-day on bean, 200-day on wheat. I think we still have the uptrend in from late June on both corn and beans. So I think we could work lower, but I don't think we're just going to keep falling out of bed.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Assuming a 3 to 6 month time window for your long term, the 7% inflation number out of China, they're going to have some ebb and flow in the results and the readings of their economy. They're still going to be growing at a pretty reasonable pace, so their demand prospects still look pretty good. So I don't think there's a big change there. As far as the tsunami is concerned, trying to collect the data and see really what changes or problems they might have had with infrastructure, see if they had any damaged corn at the ports, because they're our number one importer. If they've got to replace any inventory or any stuff in transit was challenged, we'll just have to wait and collect that information over the next couple of weeks.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Well, I think it's just part of what we're going to see more of. I think this is the period that you're going to see a lot of extremes, a lot of things happen, a lot of market volatility. So I think it's just part of the mix that we're going to experience this coming year.
In Chicago this week, March corn had a high of $7.26, a low at $6.46 and a quarter. It finished at $6.59 and a quarter, down 62 cents from last week. December futures at $5.60, down 31 and three quarters. Was there any chart damage done in the corn?
It depends on how you look at the chart. I think as long as you take a look at some of the trend lines drawn off of the June lows and the fall lows, we're down against those trend lines. So if the market kind of holds at these levels, kind of consolidates, kind of pulls out of them, then there's no technical damage. But I do think that the decline always does psychological damage, and you know, the long lost a lot of his equity this past week, and depending upon where he's at in the marketplace, he may be on margin calls. So we'll have to kind of see what happens early next week, but I don't see any technical major damage that can't be reversed here, but you have to respect the declines.
Do we have an idea yet who the primary liquidation came from in the marketplace? Who got out of the market?
Looking at the open interest numbers, they have been fairly steady. We saw about 100,000 bushels decline in previous weeks, but the open interest is fairly stabilized. So I would say it's a possible transition of ownership.
And transition of ownership from one month to the next, or just
from funds probably into the commercial hands.
Into commercial hands, you think that's a good supportive idea? Then
that is a very strong thing. I mean, the commercials need to have the ownership. When you look at your carryout numbers and as tight as they are, they should be scrambling for coverage just as quick as they can.
I totally agree. I think it was Wednesday we had the funds liquidate like 10,000. Yesterday they actually gained 10,000 contracts. They were 15,000 down earlier in the week. So the funds were big liquidators. And like Dan had said earlier, the margin guys were wanting margin. So I think a lot of the week longs were getting out of the market as well. But also, like Bill said, I think the end users are buying, which is definitely supporting this market here.
Dan, it appears the USDA reports didn't really change anything. The end-of-the-week activity that came out of Japan and from China didn't fundamentally change anything yet. What do you see in the marketplace? Have we changed this week at all, or are we still feeling like consolidation at this point?
Well, I think the market was ripe for a correction, and we are in a cyclical beat. If you look back at your cycles on corn and soybeans, it's not uncommon for them to kind of trace out 17 to 20-week cycle lows, and we are in that window here for one of those to kind of unfold. As far as the marketplace, I think there is a general belief or a feel anyway, if you do much dealings in the cash market, that maybe there may be more corn inventories around than what the market was thinking here maybe 30 days or 60 days ago. We're going to get clarity on that issue come the 31st, but that would be the only thing that I could actually say from a fundamental point of view is that the supplies do seem to be plentiful around here for cash corn. Soybeans, of course, we have a big South American crop that's coming at us, so that makes the soybeans a little heavy.
Can I follow up with you on cash corn and then maybe have the other two comment on this? You suggested that the all-day ag outlook meeting, I think, or maybe it was last Thursday, I don't remember which one, that the market seemed heavy with cash corn at that point. Do you suppose that it's actually there's more inventory out there, or is it just that the cash levels in price that were reached, no matter the basis, just managed to pull it out because, well, it was hard to resist that $7 number?
Well, I think you make a point there that it's basically out of producer hands and more in end-user hands, elevator hands, and that may be the case where if you look around, you don't have to go very far and you'll still find corn piles, and we're halfway through the marketing year. And, of course, anybody that's in the end-user business, I mean, basically since the October crop report, they've been basically forced into the situation to start accumulating inventories on fear that at some point in time either prices were going to have to go sharply higher to ration demand, and or they may not have any inventory when it comes around to August, September. So you have seen a concentration of cash inventories move into end-user hands, elevator hands, and away from farmer hands, and that might be what we're seeing right here.
And we've looked at it a very similar way. Now that we've gotten into March, a lot of the March contracts are coming due. It's created a little bit more fluid cash market. Things can be moved around, a little bit more going on. But I don't know that the export market's really kicked up yet, and waiting to see if that starts to pull some stuff down. And not directly related with our cash, but we know that China's been kind of hungry for some stuff. Now that Argentina's getting closer to coming online, we're going to be watching to see if they make purchases down there as soon as that becomes available.
At the end of the month, the United States Department of Agriculture releases both the prospective plantings report and the quarterly grain stocks report. Can we take up the grain stocks report very quickly? What are your expectations for it in corn? And do you think that usage has been strong enough to draw that number down?
Well, yes, we think. I don't have a particular number right now. We're going to come out with our numbers next Wednesday. But yes, we think that the ethanol usage was high enough. The last 6 weeks, we were over 1 million metric ton on corn exports. Bean exports have been good, but it's kind of like Bill said, we're worried that if China goes to South America, we're not going to have any demand, and they're at least every week they're 77% or more of our bean exports.
Yeah, like George and Mike, we don't have a number necessarily in place for the stocks, but we do think that the ethanol grind is definitely capable of picking up some slack that the exports maybe have not have satisfied early on. I'd also think that for the most part, the demand going forward for corn and exports could very well improve. That would very much, well, just keep us in line.
Wheat futures in Chicago this week had a high at $7.90, the low. And remember, we give you the day trade and the overnight trade, electronic and open outcry at $6.95 for the low. The March of $6.95 settlement price finished the week Friday to Friday down $1.05. July at $7.50¾, down $1.09¼. March soybeans at $14.08 top. Bottom at $13.10, settlement price there at $13.26½, a loss of 81¼ cents from the previous week. November beans at $13 even were down 61. Will November dip below 13 next week and stay there, do you think, Mr. Zwicker?
There's still some room for some corrective measures. I mean, this week's decline has definitely got the bear in control. We can go down below $13 pretty easy. I'm not convinced that we're going to stay there permanently, but we could bounce out of there. I mean, if you look at the trend lines that I talked about on corn, November beans, you could probably go down to about 1260 or so and still kind of keep that uptrend line somewhat in place. We're vulnerable to that. I think new crop beans are going to find support on expectations that maybe beans might end up on the short end of the stick on acres. We come out of that 31st report, it's likely that either one corn or soybean is going to end up bullish because somebody's going to maybe end up on the short end of the stick, or the market thinks they need more of one particular crop. Who knows what that's going to be?
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had a druthers on which one that was going to be, but you say who knows. So,
Bill? Yeah. I guess the bottom line is a dip below $13 is possible, but I don't think a dip is going to be very deep at this particular point. It's not a very good time for the new crop contracts to really come under pressure because our belief is with the cotton creeping up from the south and swallowing up acres pretty fast, corn and beans both are going to be supported. It's going to be tough to get big numbers out of both those crops.
You think the bear's in control here?
I think the bear's in control. The bear's in control until we find something bullish in this market. I mean, we're already talking about late planting and too wet in Ohio Valley and snow cover in the Dakotas, and they're going to flood out. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions yet. Of course, there's the acreage question and, of course, the planting season and weather. So I think the bears are definitely in control because now people are scared to buy. But once that gets over, I think there's definitely an uptrend and an upside here yet.
A couple of decisions farmers will make next week and maybe partially this week. One of them is to take or not to take crop insurance. First, I want to know what you think. The second is to make or not to make new crop sales, corn and soybeans, because they're probably thinking about that at this point, once they've got crop insurance in place or not. What should they do?
if I didn't know better, you thought that this was a collaboration of all the insurance companies to get you to buy crop insurance. Because if you weren't thinking about it, you're definitely thinking about it after this past week. Well, I think that the cropping, I mean, it's hard to know on a general scale, but on a general scale, I think it's pretty much part of agriculture anymore and risk management. We've got some pretty good price averages. You can buy an 85% enterprise unit, fairly reasonable. And I think that's just part of risk management at this point in time. As far as new crop sales go, again, everybody has to kind of get to their comfort level. I'm more inclined to want to still follow a seasonal pattern, and sideways market in March is not uncommon.
Oh, on our side, we're looking at the crop insurance, trying to be very, very persnickety on getting good coverage for the corn because of the input costs. And as far as beans, maybe being a little bit less aggressive, make sure you get the coverage, but maybe use more like the county coverage rather than an individual policy.
Well, I think you definitely have to look strongly at insurance. I mean, I think the revenue assurance for your fields, I mean, it locks you in and it puts a bottom in as far as making sales. Yes, we were pushing making option strategies on the corn above $6. We were pushing when we were at 14 on beans. Corn, you're probably not going to get too many people selling it now because they're still waiting to see if we don't get an uptrend.
You're listening to the March 11th edition of Commodity Week. When we return, we'll talk with Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading in Lafayette, Indiana.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was generally a cold, dreary week across the state of Illinois. Temperatures were near to slightly below normal, and that was thanks to a persistent layer of clouds that remained over most of Illinois until Friday. At this point in March, average high temperatures range from around 40 in northern Illinois to the mid-40s central and to around 50 in the south. By the end of the month, normal temperatures should be on average about 10 degrees higher. Most of the state received some precipitation this week, but the heaviest was in far southern Illinois, where heavy rain fell on the tail of the last cold front, and in northwestern Illinois, which was skirted by a storm that brought snow to Iowa, Wisconsin, and even parts of northern Illinois earlier this week. The generally cool weather looks like it will continue into next week. By midweek, southerly winds ahead of an approaching frontal system should bring in some milder air, but with it will come increasing chances for rain. This frontal system should push through Illinois late Wednesday or early Thursday. And whatever break in the weather we get may be short, as it appears another frontal system will be approaching Illinois by the weekend. That will bring another chance for scattered showers to most of the state. On the upside, however, it does appear as if temperatures will stay a bit above normal for the latter half of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the March 11th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason in studio with us today. Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. Dan Zwicker of A&DM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois. And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. On the phone line is Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading, also in Lafayette, Indiana. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Good evening.
You take a big, broad view, usually, of the commodity markets. Can you tell me, when you look down at the globe, what you see at this point, given what happened with the USDA reports this week, which weren't much, and all the activity in Asia?
Well, I think the big thing is this whole situation, from a global standpoint, is very uneasy. There's just a tremendous amount of nervousness. It seems like anymore, rather than being a commodity analyst, I'm pretty much a CIA agent. I get up at night and I check the markets, and there's just some new development occurring almost daily. But the market seems to have, I think in general, digested that. But what has happened to the markets, in my opinion, is the commodity funds and the ETF funds just simply got way, way too overpositioned. And as we know, there's no free ride in commodities, and we're seeing just the results of just kind of massive liquidation, a lot of which are generated by computer sell stops, especially at night. They circuit break at night, and we see these massive, quick, violent sell-offs. I think the market essentially is just readjusting just to a number of large-scale factors right now.
If you believe that is the case, should the market then come back up rather than stay lower? I would think that it would come to an equilibrium place after those ETF funds liquidated.
Well, I think on your panel, I think everybody covered the markets pretty close, a very, very good analysis from a fundamental standpoint. But this circuit breaker thing that I'm talking about is really difficult to analyze. It's something that you have to kind of learn to follow on a daily basis, weekly basis. And we actually make some of our major trading decisions off where those funds are. For example, we've been aggressive sellers of corn for the last 4 weeks. We've made almost a day and night effort to get client base across the nation to get about 40% of their new crop corn sales done based upon when the market was up there at those lofty levels of fund participation. Of course, since that time, we've had a pretty hard sell-off. And I think the one other aspect that I want to touch on, particularly in corn, is a year ago when you looked at the S&D tables, you could clearly see that the lower price corn value was actually stimulating demand. Looking at this a little closer today, or let's say a year later, the S&D table now shows me that the carryouts are now projected to start increasing if we're correct that we're going to see some larger corn acreage come up. Personally, I think we're going to be somewhere between 92 to 94 million acres. And if you use 164 bushel per acre yield and kind of keep the demand factors relatively consistent, I jump up that 2011-2012 carryover to about 1.2 to 1.3 billion bushels, or about a 9 to 10% stocks-to-use ratio, which would be different than what we were witnessing a year ago.
Isn't that 164 an enormous average national yield?
That's correct, but I mean, we have to pretty much use some kind of guideline. And of course, the fertilizer applications are going to just be tremendous. Granted, there's going to be some acreage that probably shouldn't go into corn, but with the moisture levels that we're at, except that southwest quadrant of the wheat belt, which really needs rain. And I just looked at the forecast a few minutes ago. There's actually going to be some 80 and 90 degree temperatures in there late next week. So we're going to have to watch that situation pretty close. And that might be the trigger where this wheat price finally stabilizes and maybe start to make a little bit of a stabilization factor for the corn and beans too.
Yeah, Jim, with your expectations of a higher corn number, how do you think the other commodities are going to fare when you compare them to last year's plantings?
Well, I've been buying rice. I think some of the acres will come out of rice because rice went up 3.5% in price in 2010. Corn went up almost 90%. So I see some shift there, not only U.S. but globally. I'm looking for lower soybean acreage, maybe 1.5 million acres less soy. And then the cotton thing, and I'm not a cotton analyst at all, but I would think there'd be some acres shifted over into cotton, most likely at the expense of hay ground and or alfalfa ground and or soybean ground. So again, I think the soybean number is the one that intrigues me the most. But on the other side of that coin, when you look at that soybean situation in South America, which is now really starting to hit the pipeline, we've just got tremendous competition coming at us, at least short term, from South America, particularly Brazil. And then there again, even though the funds have liquidated, you know, somewhere between 50 to 60,000 contracts net long in a real short period of time, they're still, in my opinion, a little bit overburdened. And I think the market almost senses that they want to try to go after those, you know, those computerized sell stops and money managers that are basically technically oriented. So that still remains somewhat of a problem. But of all the years I've been trading, I will have to admit this is one of the most difficult markets. But I want everybody to maybe step back and take a glance at those S&D tables on a weekly basis. I think that's the most valuable tool that we can give a client, because that way we can update, and of course the S&D tables are the language of price discovery.
When you're thinking about the S&D tables, one of the things that we've looked at is that corn carryout number at 675, and we've seen it 2 months in a row. Assuming that the pipeline supplies 1 billion bushels, how do you think the market's going to remedy that if it goes down from here?
Well, obviously, as you indicate, at 675, you've got a 5% stocks-to-use ratio, which is what the all-time record low. So, again, we're likely to see a lot of volatility this coming year. But until we get some more concrete factors on acreage and then see what Mother Nature gives us, I'm going to assume that we're going to buy the acres that are needed. Again, I'm sticking my neck out a little bit here, but I still think we'll see 92 to 94. Go with a great yield with a lot of fertilizer going in, and a real strong technical attempt to get as much yield as possible. Again, a year ago, I looked at those S&D tables, and I was very bullish, trying to get people to take a real solid look at it. But to me, when I look at them right now, I see kind of a wavering here and kind of a decline in this demand factor a little bit. And consequently, I'm pushing that stocks-to-use ratio more towards 9 to 10% out ahead. But again, and I think everybody's already essentially said the same thing, you know, Mother Nature is going to play a huge role in here, and this is going to be a volatile market all the way through, in my opinion.
What, going to the global market again, kind of the question we were asked at the opening here, what do you feel that China and Japan, I mean, Japan or the third world, or the third largest economy in the world, we don't know how much damage they have. Do you think this could be a prolonged reason to go lower, or is it going to...
Well, I was talking to my staff about that this afternoon. Here's what I think is going to happen, and again, there's a lot going on there, but short term, with the damage to the ports, the country's in total turmoil, you've got some logistics problems there short term. To me, that is negative corn prices, bean prices on the very short term. But as that economy, you know, rebuilds and comes back, it'll create an even larger demand base, because they'll have to play catch up. So, granted, short term, I think it is a negative aspect, but intermediate to long term, they'll rebuild, they'll come back, and they're going to need product. And so, to me, it's in a certain sense, short-term negative, intermediate, long-term bullish.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
Jim Bauer is with Bauer Trading. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. This from the U.S. Grains Council. It was released this morning from one of their directors. He says some ports in northern Japan have been seriously damaged, of course, and that they've heard that feed mills and livestock operation had also been damaged by the tsunami. Those facilities were not severely damaged in all of themselves, but the tsunami, by the earthquake, but the tsunami may have had some significant impact on the livestock sector there. And I did not give the livestock numbers today. April live cattle futures finished at 117.12.5. They were up $3.07. Lean hogs were down 32.5 at 88.15. I'll let you close out with a final word from everybody here. Maybe you can take up the livestock and whether the livestock sector in the United States might be able to pick up just a little bit from Japan.
Well, who knows for sure, but I mean, there's no doubt about it that we do have some inventory that we could probably sell into Japan. Actually, I think when you take a look at the whole Japan situation, it may end up being more bullish food than people really realize. But, of course, anytime you have logistical problems like what we're going to have to go through, that may take some time to work out.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. Bill Gentry is with Risk Management Commodities.
I guess leaving for the week, I would just say looking at last week's volatility, it just emphasizes the importance of having a plan in place and being able to execute it when you have the opportunity.
And Mike Georgie is with Allendale.
Yeah, Allendale just completed their 22nd, third year of our acreage report of our customers. We're going to do a webinar next Wednesday at 10 a.m. You can go to our website and sign up to listen to it.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being along on this March 11th edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear it again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Todd Gleason.